good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for checking in with us tonight. This is certainly not been a good day, and just because this horrific three-pronged disaster has occurred in Japan doesn't mean that it's limited to people in that country. This is just astonishing. I know you have probably seen the same reports and videos that I have seen starting this morning, actually, when we woke up. So I don't want to get into a big discussion about this, and I do want to limit our coverage of it, except to say that the third prong, after the earthquake being number one, the tsunami horror being number two, the situation at two nuclear power plants in Japan inside five different reactors carries with it right now the potential for a horrific disaster in Japan. And if it does occur there, nuclear radiation, as we all know from the Chernobyl meltdown, or explosion, I should say, is not limited to the immediate area. This situation in Japan is being described as just far worse by orders of magnitude from what occurred at Chernobyl in the old Soviet Union. From the Daily Mail in the UK, so far, there's a 6-mile radius evacuation zone around one of these plants. That would be the one at Fukushima, in the Fukushima prefecture. This evening, radiation rose to 1,000 times the safe level inside these two plants. There are fears that, in addition to the classic meltdown, there could be an explosion. If something like this were to occur, I've read that the resulting death toll would exceed the death toll from the nuclear bombs that we dropped on Japan 64 years ago. Earlier tonight, the Japanese authorities had proposed releasing some of the radioactive vapor into the atmosphere in an attempt to prevent the explosion by releasing some of the pressure. The country's nuclear safety agency says pressure inside the reactor had risen to 1.5 times the level considered normal. Officials said the vapor that would be released would not affect the environment or human health. It's just unthinkable right now. Plant workers are apparently scrambling to restore cooling water supplies. And the people working in there, how do you get people to work inside this situation? People working in there warned there was no prospect of an immediate success. We can only hope that the experts in Japan can get this under control. Tomoko Murakami, leader of the Nuclear Energy Group at Japan's Institute of Energy Economics, said there did not appear to be an imminent danger of a radiation leak. But Mark Hibbs, a nuclear expert at the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, warned that the situation could turn grave. He said, quote, "This is no laughing matter," referring to unconfirmed reports that one or more of the emergency diesel generators for the cooling system were not functioning. He said there was serious concern in Japan whether the cooling of the core and the removal of residual heat could be assured. He says if that does happen, if or does not happen, if heat is not removed, there is a definite danger of a core melt. Fuel will overheat, become dangerous, and melt down. So the situation right now in that country is it's beyond comprehension. Just completely beyond comprehension for, unless you're listening to this program and you're a nuclear engineer or you understand this, which I'm sure a lot of you do, but for a layperson like me, where it is totally beyond my ability to comprehend all this, no, I get the mechanics of it, sure, I understand that, and I get some of the physics of it, yeah, I understand that, but I'm talking about the potential for disaster. That is beyond comprehension. And I think the people who understand this, the only people who understand it, the only people who understood what would happen when, Fat Man and Little Boy were dropped, was that the name of the bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki? The only people who understood or had an inkling of what was going to happen were the people who designed it. The physicists, the, engineers, the people who had together agreed to develop a device that would commit mass murder. So, there are reports. Well, this is from one of our listeners, Gorilla Monk. He said, Mike, I wanted to update you on the situation in Japan. It seems to be deteriorating faster than I can keep up. I just got this about 15 minutes ago. He said, I've been up since 3 a.m. last night because my girlfriend is a college student studying abroad in Tokyo. She and her classmates have been stuck in their schools since the earthquake hit. The American embassy is saying they might have to evacuate them back to the States if these nuclear reactors fail. And it's really, all caps, starting to look as if they're going to have a nuclear meltdown. Of course, the nuclear power propagandists are already flooding the airwaves with their spin and disinformation, telling us that it will only be a small, quote, acceptable, end quote, dosage of radiation, just like it was small an acceptable oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico. And just like drilling for natural gas will only pollute a small and acceptable percentage of our drinking water. This is madness. I'm going to go stock up on some more canned goods. Gorilla Monk. And Jeff sent me an email and said, I heard the Republicans and the Tea Partiers are calling for further study to see if Japan really suffered a huge earthquake. Or if that's simply a myth put forward by the socialist left in order to raise taxes on the super rich. Also heard that the libertarians were saddened, but can't help because that would interfere with personal responsibility. And last, the evangelicals are okay with the earthquake, as all good Christians will soon be raptured up naked to meet Jesus anyway. But wait a minute. I think Jeff wrote that as in a very sarcastic frame. Did you, Jess? Or Jeff, were you being... And from Tim in L.A., who has family in Japan, this, the destruction of Japan is vast, and I am worried. He wrote this early this morning. If my worried about my relatives. Also, I found out that it was a tsunami warning for the West Coast, as far north as British Columbia, Canada. What's so troubling about that is the fact that the Republicans are in office and with their budget cutting on so-called government waste, would NOAA have been spared, NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, been spared the cut so that the people would have been informed about the tsunami warning? You know, the Republicans just voted, let me digress, the Republicans just voted to slash Hawaii's early warning tsunami system. How about that, huh? How about that? Bastards. Anyway, Tim concludes, so the potential for catastrophe can occur, and massive death also. But apparently cutting taxes for programs like this or the Koch brothers can be even richer is more important than the lives of millions of people. Tim in L.A. We'll be right back.
Here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
The hour. We have Sam Cedar's going to join us at the top of the next hour from Madison, Wisconsin. And also at some point tonight, maybe the third hour, we will do a podcast trivia. So just all sorts of fun and frivolity tonight. Anonymous threatens to retaliate against the people who are torturing Bradley Manning. Sunday week, the 21st, or the 20th, get it right, Mike, the 19th, there is a gathering in Washington, D.C., which I'm going to attend. The following day, there is a trip out to Quantico in support of Bradley Manning, which I also am going to attend. I hope some of you listening will be there. According to International Business Times, the hacker collective, known as Anonymous, is giving the U.S. military until Monday. Oh, I like that. To improve its treatment of Bradley Manning. The hacker collective has given this ultimatum and has said that the treatment of Private Bradley Manning must improve or Anonymous will release personal information of staff at the brig where Manning is being held. The threat is to post the personal information of the staff, Quantico Marine Base, where, according to Barrett Brown, who describes himself as the group spokesperson, you know, it's got to stop. He said the reason for the attack, the proposed attack, is the inhumane treatment of Manning. Brown says, quote, "To me, when you strip down a U.S. soldier, strip him naked, and force him to stand outside his cell, you lose your status as a human being," end quote. Brown is referring to the fact that Manning is forced to stand naked outside his cell during inspection. His attorney, David Coombs, you know this from following the story, but the attorney says Manning is being kept in conditions that can only be described as solitary confinement. The brig commander, James Everhart, has said that Manning was at risk of injuring himself. Everhart was replaced in January by Chief Warrant Officer Denise Barnes. The military said the change in command was ordered in October and is unrelated to the complaint. Yeah, of course. Brown, Barrett Brown, spokesperson for Anonymous, said the brig commander and others who order Manning's treatment will be targeted simply by posting their personal information and making that information appear high on Google search results. Brown said, quote, "There are a couple of goals. One is to make it a less pragmatic decision to take orders to do evil. We're going to make it plain that we're not happy," end quote. International Business Times says it's difficult to ascertain how serious Barrett's or the Anonymous Collective's threats are, as the group itself has no real hierarchy. Postings to the group's site, or to the site that hosts many of the group's statements to the press, can be made by anyone. The site itself right now seems to be down. Brown says he and the group have contacts within the military. He says a number of his immediate relatives served and are serving now. Brown describes what the Anonymous Collective plans to do as, quote, "investigating the people involved in the treatment of Bradley Manning," end quote. Threats from Anonymous can be very real. H.B. Gary Federal, a security firm, had thousands of its emails hacked and posted to the Internet after the head of the firm, Aaron Barr, claimed he had uncovered the identities of the group's members. The emails proved embarrassing to Barr and to the company H.B. Gary as he outlined a plan to discredit WikiLeaks and its founder using a number of dirty tricks. Barrett Brown, the spokesperson for Anonymous, says this isn't a kid in the basement. If H.B. Gary had known who they were dealing with, they would have backed off. All right. I like that. I like that very much. You can read more about this at ibtimes.com if you want to. You have till Monday. Son of a bitch. Can you imagine somebody threatening the entire U.S. military establishment? You have till Monday. Whoa. Whoa. Resistance. We'll be back after the break. We have all sorts of interesting things here to toss into the firelight around the campfire here. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. For the hour, the International Atomic Energy Administration, is that it, IAEA? They have released a press release tonight. It says Japanese authorities have informed the IAEA's Incident and Emergency Center that officials are working to restore power to the cooling systems of the Unit 2 reactor of the Fukushima Daiichi Nuclear Power Plant. Mobile electricity supplies have arrived at the site. Japanese officials have also reported that pressure is increasing inside the Unit 1's reactor containment, and the officials have decided to vent the containment to lower the pressure. The controlled release will be filtered to retain radiation within the containment. Really? Can you do that? Three reactors at the plant were operating at the time of the earthquake, and the water level in each of the reactor vessels remains above the fuel elements, according to Japanese authorities. The IAEA's Incident and Emergency Center continues to liaise with the Japanese authorities and is in full response mode to monitor the situation closely around the clock. Well, that certainly is a relief, right? It's, like I say, to someone who is not sophisticated about these things in terms of the engineering and the physics involved, it can be pretty scary. Mike in Denver writes, "Hey, Mike, a fission explosion, you know, nuclear explosion, has to be carefully engineered. Nuclear weapons are as intricate as wristwatches. The scenarios that can happen are bad enough, but a reactor can no more have a fission explosion than a shaken bag of gears and springs can self-assemble into a watch, which I'm sure is a great comfort to those confronting the possibility of a meltdown." Mike in Denver. Okay, well, thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Is it not possible, though, to... Where's Marianne, our Aurora Bureau Chief up in Illinois? She's She's a physicist. About things nuclear. Mike may be too. I mean, I'm just looking for another comment here about this. If it's my understanding, though, that given the right circumstances, there can be, fission can begin to occur. But I guess not. Okay. All right, Mike. Thanks. You know, like you say, that's great comfort to those confronting the possibility of a meltdown. It's just a tragedy beyond belief for the Japanese. The force of that earthquake is astonishing. Just astonishing. I wonder, I've got to wonder, wonder in passing, you know, one of the owners is General Electric, or one of the designers, or the one of the companies that made the reactors themselves, or the containment vessels, or the plant, whatever. I know GE, one of the now partial owners of NBC, was involved in the construction of the of this nuclear plant we're talking about. But given the experience of the Japanese people with the destructive power of things nuclear, I just wonder, when I started hearing this today, what would possess them, and I say this innocently, what would possess them to build a nuclear reactor on the shore of what, that's either the Pacific or the Sea of Japan. I mean, it's right there. Plus, they all know that they're on the edge of the Ring of Fire. They also know that Japan, I heard today, receives more earthquakes as a country than any other country on Earth. About 20% of the globe's known earthquakes occur in Japan every year. I didn't know that. I hope I'm stating that statistic correctly. And the further statistic is about 30% of Japan's energy is generated by nuclear reactors. But given the horrific experience, granted, it was the bombing, using nuclear power as a weapon, but still, knowing the power involved here, the potential for destruction, I thought today several times, what would possess the Japanese to build a nuclear power plant when they, I mean, I don't know, maybe they had to, because they, I don't know, they have no oil, they have no coal, I have no idea. My knowledge of the mineral assets of Japan is zero. I have no idea. It just seems like a horrific, it doesn't seem like, I mean, it is a horrific experience that the Japanese are having to deal with. Man. From Wisconsin, this is from alternate.org. Everybody knows Republicans' biggest weakness is money, so why not hit them in that sweet spot? That's what many amazing Wisconsin firefighters did yesterday when they collectively began withdrawing their funds from Madison's M&I Bank, whose executives and board members were among the highest the highest donors to Governor Scott Walker's campaign. It says, heeding a call by Firefighters Local 311, President Joe Conway, to move your money, union members withdrew over $100,000 from the bank, with some reports stating that number is as high as $192,000. Either way, it was a hefty enough chunk of change. The M&I shut its doors and closed for the day early. This is a very simple, very peaceful way to inflict some serious damage on the money grubbers. Super kudos to the Firefighters Union. Anecdotally, M&I Bank in Madison received $1.7 billion in bailout money via President George W. Bush's Troubled Assets Relief Program. The bank was acquired by the Bank of Montreal in December 2010 for $4.1 billion in stock. And as an update to this, two firefighters with old school ideas about saving had over $600,000 between the two of them, and they demanded cashier's checks on the spot. posted by Julianne Shepherd at alternet.org, I believe. Yeah, that's a good way. I will not deal with a bank. The only place that we deal with a bank, everything else is with the credit union. Everything that we do that involves any kind of financial transactions is handled by a credit union, except one thing, and that is our credit union does not handle business accounts. So Malloy Broadcasting LLC has to use a commercial bank, and I hate it because we have to use one of the commercial banks here in the South that is notorious for its corrupt practices. Oh, all legal. Don't misunderstand. It's all legal. But then every bank is notorious for its corrupt practices. Even family-owned banks? Well, I don't know. Maybe not. The budget that this freak Scott Walker is pushing through calls for deep cuts, you know, the state budget, deep cuts to state aid to schools and local governments. Walker called for no tax or fee increases, but cuts of $1.5 billion to items like the schools and local governments. What a son of a bitch. You know, what an absolute, you know, I read something today. Walker doesn't give a damn about any recall efforts. Walker doesn't give a damn about any efforts to stop his reelection. He doesn't care. He was put into office by the Koch brothers to do something specific. And that something has now been accomplished. Walker doesn't give a damn. He couldn't care less. He has no interest in being governor of Wisconsin. He has a nice, cushy insider's position with Koch brothers that will pay him 10, 15, 30, 50 times the money he gets as governor with Wisconsin. However he leaves, if he leaves being impeached, if he leaves on a recall, if he leaves because he has a heart attack and they carry him out feet first, whatever way Walker leaves, Scott Walker, he doesn't give a tinker's damn. It doesn't make any difference. Children's health insurance, cut it. Stay aid to schools, slash it. Environmental protection within the state, it can get rid of it. He doesn't give a damn. Whether he, impeachment or recall petitions, no, don't stop them. I'm not suggesting. I've just read that he couldn't care less.
A very wealthy U.S. citizen.
He just couldn't care less. What was that? All right, that means I got to get out of here. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
You see, he predicted that.
To those of us outside Wisconsin, lost in the drama of the attempt, apparently successful at this point, to take away from working people in Wisconsin the right to collective bargaining, which is the right to freely assemble, which is a First Amendment right. lost in that drama has been the fact that the budget put forward by this son of a bitch, Scott Walker, is just an absolute outrage. Democrats describe the level of cuts that this pig Walker has decided on, to schools in particular, as devastating, even inhumane to ordinary families. Some said they feared the cuts might result in the layoffs of teachers and that public schools might find themselves crammed, perhaps with as many as 60 children in a single classroom in some cases. A Democrat in the legislature, Representative Tamara Grigsby, said, quote, "There is going to be an annihilation of education in this state," end quote. But Republicans said that the budget plan itself was but one more piece of evidence that public sector workers needed to pay more for their health and pension benefits, and that collective bargaining on matters beyond wages could no longer be afforded. Well, it's not about wage. I'm acting like these sons of bitches are making sense, and they're not. I don't know. I'll be curious to see what the residents of Wisconsin are going to do. Scott Walker's plan would cut about 8 to 10% from aid to schools, called for local school districts to be further limited in how much they can raise in property taxes. The bastard also suggested major cuts to local governments, which would be restricted in how they could raise property taxes to make up for the losses. Walker's budget also, at the same time, proposes big tax breaks, including cuts for those who invest in Wisconsin companies. But you know, among all the deficit-troubled states in the U.S., and they're only there because of Republican policies, because of corporate capitalist policies. That's the only reason everybody's in trouble up their eyeballs. Wisconsin is neither the worse off nor the most fortunate. They're kind of in the middle. Walker has described the expected budget deficit for the coming 2 years at $3.6 billion. And others say that is nonsense. It's totally exaggerated. A police union leader in Madison said, quote, "It's like trying to fix a small leak in your roof by burning your house down." Well, I would hope that Walker's political days are numbered. Eugene Debs said one time, I'm going to quote here, 10,000 times has the labor movement stumbled and fallen and bruised itself and risen again, been seized by the throat and choked into insensibility, enjoined by courts, assaulted by thugs, charged by the militia, shot down by regulars, attacked by the press, frowned upon by public opinion, deceived by politicians, infested by spies, deserted by cowards, betrayed by traitors, bled by leeches. But notwithstanding all of this, it is the most vital power this planet has ever known. And its historic mission of emancipating the workers of the world from the thraldom of the ages is as certain of ultimate realization as the setting of the sun. Eugene Debs, socialist. Oh, and by the way, did you see this story? At least three of the Wisconsin State Senate Republicans who demanded and voted that public workers sacrifice benefits, wages, and even collective bargaining rights for the sake of the budget have applied for and received hundreds of thousands of dollars in federal farm subsidies. From 1995 through 2009, state senators Luther Olson, Dale Schultz, and Sheila Harsdorf all had stakes in farms that received between them more than $300,000 in taxpayer funds. Now, those federal appropriations had no direct impact on the state's current budget woes, but the cash spent on those subsidies, which went to support a range of functions from soybean production to small hog operations, could have been used elsewhere, perhaps even in Wisconsin. On his 2011 financial disclosure form obtained by the Huffington Post, Olson Senator Luther Olson lists Riverview Farm in the town of Wausahara as a business interest. There are a number of other Olsons listed as partners, with Luther Olson claiming a 20% stake. According to the Environmental Working Group, Riverview Farm in Wausahara County has received $58,000 in subsidies. Another Riverview Farm in nearby Portage County, $26,000. Olson lists Sunflower Farm among his business activities. Several phone calls to Olson's office were not returned. On his financial disclosure form, Schultz, that would be Dale Schultz, lists the Schultz Family Farm in Sauk County as a business activity. He got $61,000 in farm subsidies. Several calls to Schultz's office were not returned. Senator Sheila Harsdorf does not list any farms on her disclosure form, but her earlier filings have listed a personal business stake in Trimble Valley Farms. She has received $194,000 in federal subsidies. Several calls to her office were not returned. What a bunch of filthy sons of bitches, all, especially these three. You know what I'm saying? Stick around. Sam Cedar's going to join us here pretty quickly. I'm Mike Mullen. Sam Cedar joins us from Madison, around the corner from the Capitol. Hey, Sam.
How you doing, Mike?
I'm all right. How are you doing? What's give us a sense of what's going on tonight.
Well, the Capitol building's been closed now for a couple hours, and so things are, you know, pretty quiet. And, you know, I guess I've been talking to people here. I've been here since this morning, and, you know, the tone apparently changed, you know, quite a bit after Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
When they rammed that bill through the Senate. Walker apparently signed it today, this morning, in private. Very appropriate. And, people are just waiting to see. There's, you know, nobody's quite sure how many people are going to show up tomorrow, but there's a lot of talk that there's going to be tens of thousands, maybe over 100,000 people tomorrow showing up. There's a real sense that people are gearing up for it.
Isn't also tomorrow's when several thousand people on tractors are supposed to descend on Madison?
Yeah, there's going to be, I think like two major rallies tomorrow. One, I think, is going to start around 10 or 11. The other one, I think, is going to start later in the afternoon. And the one in the morning is supposed to involve a lot of tractors coming into the city.
Mm-hmm.
People are talking about that. I think there's going to be a big rally around 11 a.m. You know, one of the interesting things that I found out since I've been here, and, this will make sense to you, Mike, but apparently what Walker did is that he essentially more or less relieved the local police and even the Capitol Police to be responsible for security for the Capitol, and he's brought in the state troopers. And, the implications of that are basically the two or threefold. One is that he doesn't even trust the people from Madison, the local police, to essentially do what he may decide he wants to do tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And nobody knows quite sure what that is. And the other thing is You're talking about state troopers who are used to, you know, basically sitting in cars and chasing people on the highway.
Right.
And they don't know anything about crowd control. And so, in fact, the union, the troopers union, and you remember, this is one of the unions that was exempted from his attack on collective bargaining. They actually sent a letter saying, you know, we want some legal liability here because we don't want our members to be sued for performing duties that they're not trained to do in case something goes wrong. So it's sort of a weird situation, and nobody's quite sure what to make of it.
You know, as you're talking, I'm wondering, first of all, as you said, the governor has signed this legislation. So it is now a matter of law, and so far has not been challenged in the federal courts. But I'm just wondering, the First Amendment guarantees the right of the people peacefully or peaceably to assemble, the right of free, the right of choosing who you want to assemble with. And if people want to get together, I think the First Amendment has been used in the past when union membership has come under attack, I think. So I'm wondering if do you see a possible constitutional challenge to what Walker has signed?
Well, you know, I gotta think that there's a lot of different challenges that are available. I mean, aside from all the shenanigans with the process, you know, they didn't amend the law in the way that they were supposed to in terms of offering the people who showed up at that meeting, you know, the conference meeting, the Democrats, a chance to look at the law. There's questions as to whether or not there's in fact elements of the law that would have forced a two-thirds quorum as opposed to having, you know, their claims of stripping it of all fiscal implications.
Mm-hmm.
There are going to be challenges in state, apparently, about, you know, whether or not it affects home rule, because you're not allowing cities and municipalities to deal with the unions as they choose to deal with the unions. And then I think there could be, I mean, you know, if they could get people on the National Labor Relations Board, I mean, I think there could be all sorts of other issues. And I don't know if it'll be challenged in Supreme Court federally, but, you know, the real issue, and I think part of the reason why they raced this through, and I'm talking to someone tomorrow who knows a lot more about Wisconsin State Supreme Court issues than just about anybody, I'm told, but my understanding is that there is an election on April 4th for the state Supreme Court. They elect their judges. And it's 4-3 right now, Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
There's every reason to believe that all of this anger is going to be channeled into that race, and you're going to get a Democrat who may be the swing vote, may flip it 4-3 Democratic, and all this stuff could, you know, practically be overturned. And so there's a chance, I think, that what Walker was really doing is trying to fast-track this thing to get it to the state Supreme Court before there's a chance that state Supreme Court flips. So.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think there's a myriad of different challenges that could come up. And frankly, it's quite possible that by the time any type of challenge makes it to a federal Supreme Court or the state Supreme Court, you'll already have switched the balance of power in the Senate, in the Wisconsin State Senate at that point. So it's really tricky to know what happens after this. And, you know, Mike, I think at the end of the day, the really important thing is, you know, who's going to show up tomorrow? How many people are going to show up? You know, Michael Moore was tweeting out saying that tomorrow very well may be the beginning of the end of this attempt by the plutocracy in this country to impose austerity on the backs of working people and middle class people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some real truth to that.
I hope that scenario is the one that develops. I think the people of Wisconsin, there are enough people in Wisconsin who are outraged, and maybe even some Republicans who didn't realize that their party had now become the fascist party of the United States, certainly in Wisconsin. So I hope what you're talking about, or Michael Moore's talking about, or some of us have hoped would happen. But what you just described about the Supreme Court, two points. First of all, I don't think Scott Walker really cares. Just before you came on the air, I was talking about Walker was obviously put into office to do a couple of things, one of which he has now accomplished. I don't think he gives a tinker's damn about these recall petitions that are circulating. I don't think he is the least bit interested in a second term. I think he was put into office, and by that I mean it almost literally. He was funded by a cadre of corporatists, not the least of whom were the Koch brothers, with one purpose: to continue this assault on the working class. So he accomplished what he was paid to do. I don't think this guy, I think this guy has a nice cushy job with Koch brothers or whomever, once this, charade that he's involved in finishes, no matter how it finishes. That's A. Here's B. The state Supreme Court in Wisconsin ruling in favor of the workers, rather than in favor of Scott Walker, can have their ruling immediately squashed. Take a look at Bush v. Gore. Back in 2000, when the Florida Supreme Court, the ruling of the Florida Supreme Court was kicked to the curb by the five Republicans on the U.S. Supreme Court. They said no. A state Supreme Court, you know, all these states' right bastards were very silent then. But when the federal Supreme Court says the state Supreme Court has no business issuing a ruling about how votes are counted, that was kind of the death knell. So that's why I'm concerned. Those two points, I'm concerned about what's going on. Hey, can you hold on a minute?
Yeah.
All right, let me put you on hold. Maybe you can come up with some kind of an answer to that gibberish I just dumped on you. Stick around. We'll be right back with Sam Cedar from Wisconsin. I'm Mike Malloy.
Love's the only engine of survival. Your servant here, he has been told to say it.
Sam Cedar's with us tonight. He's in Madison, around the corner from the Capitol. Were you able to come up with any kind of response to that gibberish I dumped on you there about the Supreme Court?
Well, hey, I mean, sadly, I don't know that it's gibberish, Mike. I mean, you know, look, first of all, Scott Walker, yeah. Does that guy go on? Does he care about his future in politics? Listen, Scott Walker's not a very bright guy.
Right.
I mean, I think, you know, there was, from a political standpoint, there was a lot more smoother ways of doing it. He's got a lot of bravado. He's not a guy who's going to go anywhere. He must know this now, too. I think you're right about that. They pulled this thing stunt Wednesday night because they figured we got nothing left to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Because we're all going to go out. And, yeah, is Scott Walker, whether it's a year and a half from now because of the recall vote, or 3 years from now, 4 years from now when he gets voted out anyways, is he going to go on to have a very nice, cushy, right-wing welfare job? Of course. Of course this guy will.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as far as the federal Supreme Court, it's the U.S. Supreme Court overturning some ruling by the state of Wisconsin, you know, that's hard to believe because I don't know that there's really any federal issues there. There was arguably... but you're right. Nobody expected it to wind up at the Supreme Court with Bush v. Gore. But the most important thing to come out of this is really going to be a function of, is this movement that started in Madison, that is spreading to other states like Ohio, Like, you're starting to have, like, groundswell of, you know, firefighters protesting in Oklahoma City.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to see this? Is something like this going to turn into a general strike? Is there a chance? And that's, at the end of the day, that's the most important thing, because one way or another, you know, even if we get back to parity in Wisconsin, which they won't, you know, the best case scenario people are talking about is having people's pensions cut.
Right.
And having pay cuts. The bottom line is, have working people in this country, have they had enough of it to the point where they're going to look around and say, you know, this country is now working for 1 to 10% of the people who own and control the vast majority of the wealth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the issue.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, I was going to say that the idea of civil disobedience now is becoming one that is more and more on the table, to borrow somebody's phrase. When we get to a situation, Sam, and I think we've gotten there, where the usual avenues of power are no longer open to anyone except the people who are extremely wealthy on their own, and even they, unless they're backed by a certain branch of corporatist America, even they don't have a chance. Look at the woman in California who spent $147 million and didn't make it. Since these usual venues or avenues of power are now closed to, oh, I don't know, someone like you or someone like me or him or her, then what is left? If that's true, and starting back in the Reagan years, there has been a concentrated effort to load the federal judiciary with right-wingers, and that has been highly successful. The Democratic Party per se has turned into, for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, a bunch of go-along, get-along cowards or Republican light, take your pick. So what's left? I'll tell you what's left. What's left is, they call it general strike, call it people just stopping the machine. Go back to what Mario Savio said in 1964 at Sproul Hall at UC Berkeley, where he said there comes a time when if you continue to cooperate with the machine, you're committing a crime. You've got to throw yourself into the gears and make the damn thing stop. So, general strike, good idea. Civil disobedience, better idea. If all of a sudden, and I'm not talking about 100,000 people, I'm talking about 15 or 20 or 30 million people just saying this is enough. And again, Sam, we've talked about this before. I don't know what it's going to take. I don't know where the tipping point is. If Michael Moore feels that the tipping point is occurring in Madison, then that's great. I'm all for it. But even more, I think, is starting to call for civil disobedience faintly. Because I don't think anyone wants to be charged under the USA Patriot Act with an act of treason, but I think civil disobedience is the avenue that we're going to have to go. Nobody's listening. Nobody in those halls of power, to use a cliche, is paying a damn bit of attention. The political system is not working. The voting machines are rigged. You know how many millionaires, of course you do, are in the U.S. Senate? Do you know how many of this class of 90 that just got in there in the U.S. House are millionaires? Folks, common folks, Sam, are so far back in the rut that I don't know. I'm starting to think in terms of maybe Gandhian, maybe Thoreauian, maybe Martin Luther Kingian, but civil disobedience. Can I put you on hold again?
Sure.
All right, hold on, Sam. We'll come right back. We're talking with Sam Cedar. He's in Madison, Wisconsin. And we'll continue the conversation after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 25 before the hour. This is the Malloy Show. We're talking with Sam Seder, who is in Madison, Wisconsin tonight. And we'll be there tomorrow. Sam Seder reporting from the epicenter of the cheese quake.
Exactly.
I'm sorry.
I've had more dairy products in the past 8 hours than I think I have in the prior week. But you know, I'll tell you, Mike, I got to say that in terms of your feeling that the only thing that's going to work for us now is some form of social disobedience. Civil disobedience. I think on some level I may agree. And, you know, my only hesitation comes from less from an intellectual sort of observational standpoint and more from one of, like, you know, am I prepared to get myself arrested? You know, you look and see just last week, I think it was, maybe it was the week before, this guy Tim DeChristopher just got sent to jail for 10 years for interrupting an auction. Where they were auctioning off our land,
right,
to the highest bidder of the oil and gas cartels, and this guy interrupted that auction by actually winning the auction, and they sent him away to prison for 10 years, and I think to the extent that we're at the point where it's civil disobedience. It has more to do with the fact that I don't know that I'm prepared to go away for 10 years for something like that. But I'll tell you something. I spoke this week on my on my web show to Chris Hayes and to Lawrence Lessig, and they both separately cited the same study. And when we were talking about who really controls what's going on in this country. And there was a political scientist at Princeton, I think his name was Gillen, and he looked at survey questions from like a 20-year period between like 1980 and 2000, maybe it was 81 and 2002 or something like that. And he basically came to the conclusion that regardless of who was holding office, regardless of who was voted for or what their platform was, if you looked at what the policy desires were of the rich in this country, and you looked at what the policy desires were of the not rich, and that's really, you're talking about 80% of the country and 20% of the country. No matter who was in office, the policy outcomes that were desired by the rich always seemed to happen.
Right.
And it has gotten worse over the course of those 20 years, and it's gotten much worse in the past 10 years. And, you know, I'm talking to people who don't identify themselves as liberal, who don't consider themselves leftist, and who are outwardly using the word plutocracy. And, we're talking about a level of rich, a height of wealth in this country that no longer really cares what happens in this country because, you know, the idea that this country would explode in some type of socialist revolution was one of the main factors, I think, in bringing us the New Deal, frankly.
Right.
And I think, to a certain extent, the economic elite in this country, they don't really care at the end of the day because they're so heavily invested in other countries around the world that we don't have the same ability to threaten them in terms of social upheaval. But I guess it's the only way to find out, maybe, to start heading in that direction. And, you know, listen, the idea of 100,000, 200,000, 300,000 people showing up tomorrow, that would be just a small drop in a lake, if you will, of what needs to happen. But it would be going in the right direction. It would be it would be signaling to the rest of the country that this movement is not dead and it can get bigger.
Well, a couple of things. The idea of getting physically involved. It's one thing to be a theoretician. It's something else to be a tactician and then go ahead and get involved in it. I'm going to be in D.C. Saturday week, and I'm going to find out firsthand, Sam, because I'm going to get involved in civil disobedience at that event. A. B. You and I both have young kids. By the way, how is Myla?
She's 5 and a half now.
5 and a half, and Molly is 6 and a half. Yow! Seems like just yesterday, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And people like you and me have to consider that for sure, because there is risk. But I don't know. And you're right. The wealthy class in this country has insulated itself to the point where, you know, a million people in the street would probably be the same to them as watching a football game between Harvard and Yale on some, you know, nice fall afternoon. Like, they don't care who really wins, but it's a great reason to hoist a few and kick back with your buddies. So, I don't know, but it has to be tested. In the past, if you look at the nation's history, I don't care what the movement was, if it was women's suffrage or civil rights or student movement or anti-war or union rights, in the past, taking to the streets the right of the people to peacefully assemble, if it got beyond peaceful assembly, it was an indication that those to whom the assembly was directed weren't paying attention. But it's always in the past, I think, maybe, I may be wrong here, but it's worked. At least it's gotten the attention of the power. And the attention, once you get the attention, it's like that old story about the farmer. In order to make the mule pull the plow like the mule is supposed to, you first got to hit him upside the head with a 2x4 just to get his attention. So you make a good argument. I hadn't thought about that civil disobedience up against this entrenched 5, 10, 15, 20%, whatever it is, that couldn't give a rat's ass about civil liberties or about the U.S. Constitution. They're above it. They're beyond it. They live someplace where you and I don't live. So it's a good point, Sam.
But, you know, but I got to say, though, I mean, with that said, you know, I think at the end of the day, it may be the next 10% down. It could be, I think that the most important quintile, if you will, in terms of the strata of this country, I think is that second quintile. You know, this is the quintile that is feeling the pinch during this recession in a way that I think people in the bottom half, or the lowest three quintiles, if you will, 60% of the country, have felt over the course of the past 10 years. And I think, you know, that it's that 60 to 80% of wealth in this country that I think could make a difference. So, you know, I'm not in any way discouraging civil disobedience. I'm saying that the hurdle is may even be higher than it has been in the past on some level. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, like I think to the extent that I have hesitations about it, it really does do with, like, you know, do I have the oats myself?
Right.
And I think, you know, as we look at what's happening in this country, and we're simply on the cusp now of the next wave of pain that the Republicans and, frankly, the Obama administration are going to impose on us.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
You know, they have the debate is not, hey, should we do what all the major economic analysts say? And actually spend more money as opposed to cutting programs for people? No, that's not even a part of the debate. The question is, how much will we cut? And basically, I mean, we know who they're going to cut it from. The only question that's up in the air is that are we going to be able to take it away from all retirees and Social Security? Mm-hmm. Beyond that, we know that they're going to hit poor people. We know they're going to hit food stamps. We know they're going to hit home heating fuel help. Mm-hmm. We know that they're going to hit pregnant women and kids who can't have enough to eat. And we know they're going to hit pensions across the country of union members. And they're going to break their promises to government workers. The real question is, are they gonna try and go after Social Security? And maybe that's what it would take. Although, you know, it's a tough thing for people at the age where they should be going out and doing this protest to perceive that their Social Security has been taken away from them, mm-hmm. you know, 20 or 30 years down the road.
Well, I think that is the next big fat target on the horizon. The mere existence of Social Security, I think, has been just a tremendous irritant to the DuPonts and Henry Fords, and I use those two because they were around when it was first put into play.
Right.
It's been a horrible pain in the nether regions to the capitalists, to the corporatists. They hate it. And A, B, they want to get their hands on it because there's an awful lot of money there. Kathy tells me you have to go.
I do. I have to jump off.
Okay.
I got to meet some folks and we get ready for tomorrow.
Okay. Well, listen, take it easy tomorrow. You may be able to test your theory about whether or not or to what degree you can get involved in civil disobedience. Take care, okay?
I will, and I'll be tweeting out live video at Majority FM on Twitter.
Majority.fm.
Yeah, Majority.fm, or you can follow me on Majority FM, and I'll be tweeting out live video there. So,
okay,
check it out.
All right, sounds good.
Right.
Thanks, Sam.
Mike.
All right, take care. We'll be right back. It's interesting. Talking with Sam, I had a flash on MSNBC because Sam has been doing some pretty good work over there, filling in. I think he ought to get his own program on MSNBC. But just thinking about MSNBC, I glance up at our monitors here in the studio. CNN is still providing fairly in-depth coverage of the horror that has occurred in Japan. And MSNBC switches over to Lock Up Raw. Jesus God. Regarding civil disobedience and whether or not it's effective, Prairie 2 writes, and events will be set in motion by people who either don't care about the outcome, like the flower vendor in Tunisia, who just couldn't take it anymore and set himself on fire, and by people who don't see a future for their kids. Or the kids themselves who see no future. Once the crowd starts to move, no debate is necessary. The mass of people starts to have its own intelligence as it moves with a common purpose. Yeah. I certainly get what Sam is saying, and I appreciate his questioning. Excuse me, his questioning. His own willingness to do that, to get involved in civil disobedience, because yes, you do have to be willing to accept consequences. That's part of it, and I think we all understand that. Coming up, bottom of the next hour, we're going to do podcast trivia. Not now, bottom of the next hour. I got this email today, and I don't think the person who sent it thinks I'm going to read it, but I think I will. Hi, Mike. I suspect the following story is too long and possibly pointless to share with your listeners, but I thought I might at least bring a wry grin to your face. I'm a clockmaker. Around the corner from me lives another semi-retired clockmaker. I used to go over to his house from time to time. We'd trade parts and expertise. He's a German, trained in Germany, and of an age that would probably have put him in the Hitler Youth. I wonder if someone can completely overcome such indoctrination at a young age, but I didn't find it surprising that over his workbench is a picture of Ronald Reagan. He visited my house a couple of times and met my now husband, Mark. He could not have missed the fact that I am a gay man. I assiduously avoided talking politics with him. He was a member of my local clock and watch association, and I figured there was just no point in stirring that pot. But he would repeatedly try to bait me into political discussion, usually a simple statement of fact that countered his Fox-distributed right-wing talking point would render him mute and bewildered-looking. One day he came into my clock shop and started in again. It was the day that Senate Republicans had gone into closed session about 6 or 7 years ago, Republicans only, to discuss the anti-gay marriage constitutional amendment. I questioned him on the ethics of that kind of backroom dealing, and he spouts to my face, "I don't think gay should have special rights." That was it. He'd pushed my buttons once too often. I verbally lashed into him, complete with expletives, and shortly told him to get the hell out of my shop and not to come back. It's amazing. He hasn't come to any more meetings of the local association because he might have to share the same meeting hall with me. But I've seen him twice at our regional convention where I volunteer at the registration desk. He actually averts his eyes in the most comical fashion, even though I'm right in front of him processing his registration. He's obviously deathly afraid of the Jewish queer who stood up to him. So every time you refer to right-wing cowardice, as you did a couple of nights ago, I think of this man, and I smile. Just wanted to share that with you. Keeping it lit, Dave in Orange County, California. You know, I read that today, and you know, Dave's right. It's kind of like, you know, it's one of those little stories that mattered to Dave, I guess, in the big picture. It's just one of a trillion stories, but there's something about that story that just, you know, got my attention. I frankly think Dave ought to give up clock making and become a screenwriter. I could just see this whole scene. I could just, you know, it was, plus Dave's a good writer. But a lot of people listen to this program and email in are good writers. I'm astounded sometimes by that fact. But anyway, Dave, thanks for writing. There was something that was appealing about that. As if marriage for anybody is a special right. No, you know, I'm not going to start up. I'm not going to start again. I've had my say about telling people that they can't enter into a contract with another human being if they choose to. And I'm not going to get on about equal protection under the law. I'm not, you know, I've been there, done that. I just realize it's one more blemish on this country that probably shouldn't be there. Or, I mean, shouldn't be there. Bastards. All right, a lot of stuff here. But we're going to take a break here and then come back to the final hour of the program tonight. Podcast trivia at the bottom of this hour. And what else we got? Do we have a moment with Bob? No. Oh, I have a what reads like a moment with Prairie too, frankly. It's a little bit different from the stuff that Prairie 2 usually sends in. Plus a couple of emails that you've sent me here in the past hour or so. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This hour, sponsored by Joe. This hour is sponsored by Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Their message, thank you, State Senator Julie Lassa, one of the Fab 14 who fought for the rights of union workers and the middle class. Now we fight to recall Governor Walker and the Republicans who illegally stole our collective bargaining rights. That's the message from Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point. And I left off one announcement last hour and the first hour. Shame on me. Hour two, Carol Bucco and Carol in British Columbia. I think I only mentioned it once. Their message was, we wish our fellow Americans peace, love, and community in our shared future. Turn on your love light and keep it lit. From Bucco and Carol in British Columbia. And, of course, hour one was Kathleen McCall. Thank you, Kathleen. Thank you, Bucco and Carol. This hour, Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Thanks to all of you. And as a matter of fact, I might as well mention this now. We got a very generous podcast subscription package from Sean. And I want to share with you what Sean wrote. At the bottom of this hour, we will be doing podcast trivia. This is what Sean wrote. I am donating 12 Malloy podcasts with a call to all engineers and scientists to join me in boycotting corporations. Engineers, scientists, and all experts in the technical trades, please join me in boycotting your hard work and intellectual efforts to big corporations who are destroying the country. Pledge to stop giving your good ideas and solutions to these big corporations and focus on those organizations that work to make our lives that work to make better our lives instead of destroying them. I need your help to make this work. Thank you, Sean. And along with this message Sean sent to our main office in Connecticut, or is it New York? Connecticut. A check for 12 podcast gift subscriptions. Now, we've had people donate 5, 8, 10 in the past, and usually by choice, they choose to remain anonymous, and some do, some don't. I frankly would like to mention everybody's name who is kind enough to donate podcast subscriptions, because I think getting a podcast to this program makes a lot of sense. It costs $59.60 a year if you're to subscribe on a yearly basis, and it's in your email account every morning. I think every morning. Works out to about 25 cents a program. And you can download it onto anything at this point. Jesus, you can download it onto a tuning fork if you want to. But like I said, some people want to remain anonymous. Some people who make the larger contributions, some want to let folks know that they're doing this and why they're doing it. And either way is fine with me. But Sean did not indicate any desire to be anonymous, so I included the message that came with it. And thanks a lot, Sean. So the next 12 podcast subscriptions that we give away will be courtesy of, we'll mix them up, but I mean, it'll still be, courtesy of Sean. Okay? And again tonight, thanks to Kathleen McCall, Carol Schenker, and Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. All right, this is kind of weird. This is from Prairie 2, walking out of Michigan. Back in 2011, the Republicans in Michigan pushed through new laws that allowed them to begin doing away with local government simply by declaring a crisis and replacing government with corporate managers. After the Democrats were completely swept from the stage in 2012, this dogma became the law of the land. And life was good if you could pay for it. For many, paying for the essentials of life rapidly became impossible, and scavenging became the new normal. Copper became the new currency of trade until it was gone. Having heat required scavenging wood to burn, and this often ended in tragedy, but it had become a world of tragedy. Corporations needed fewer and fewer workers except for security, which became ever more brutal. Manufactured goods that supported the rich and the security state were all imported, and the entire production of the land was needed to be exported to pay for it, much like Ireland in 1840. That production became ever less as crops failed and the oil that made corporate agriculture happen became impossible to import. Things like medicine were only for the rich, and finding enough food became increasingly difficult. Then the food stopped coming altogether. Enough people walking inside a narrow stretch of ground will wear a trail into the earth in a surprisingly short period of time. People who don't know where they are going will instinctively follow the person in front of them and the trail gets worn deep. Sometimes the walking was done on pavement where the walkers applied a certain kind of sheen to the surface, a mixture of everything that people leave behind, blood, vomit, urine, all the products of the sick and dying. Here and there were the items struggling people drop, all manner of personal things, suitcases, clothes, blankets, rags, here and there a bicycle, a baby buggy, even wheelbarrows that had carried loved ones who couldn't walk when they started. All lay abandoned, particularly on the steep hills and scattered off to the side were the bones. Because, you see, at night, an incredible number of stray dogs would come out to scavenge for food. As people lost the will to scare them away, they started coming to the trail in daylight. Their only competition were the crows that the dogs would chase off the abandoned bodies. After a particularly cold night, the crows didn't need to share. Not everybody was completely dead when set upon by the dogs. The trail didn't always take the most direct route, and leaving the trail near any corporate work site or an intact town could also be fatal, as newcomers weren't welcome. For most of these towns, it was only a matter of time before they also took to the trail. Where did the trail end? It didn't have an end. It was like a river flowing into the desert. The trail was one of many. They would ebb and flow and merge like storm runoff, but none of them really went anywhere. America simply evaporated. Prairienumeral2.com. Jesus. Come on, Bruce. Wow. What was that? It sounds like that movie, The Road. Remember that? That's what it sounds like. Only it's titled Walking Out of Michigan. Well, that certainly screws up my Friday night. Scary stuff, Bruce. Thanks. That's Prairie 2's contribution for tonight. He's got a couple in here that have backed up because we had so much stuff going on with the madness of King Walker in Wisconsin. So we thought we would get that one in tonight. All right, we've got a break here. We're going to come back and I'm going to share with you some of the emails that have come in here. All right?
Line up for trivia.
Well, not now.
Yeah.
After the next break. Yeah, after the bottom of the hour, we'll do trivia. Oh. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy.
Supposed to be protecting me, storing every little file, make a promise and take a while, hooked up to a satellite, make sure the world's behaving right. I don't mean to bust your groove, think it's time we made a move. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free tonight. Freedom isn't free.
21 past the hour. A couple of emails here. Kathy in Maine writes, Mike, my best girlfriend here is from North Tokyo. It took all day today to contact her parents. They're fine, but informed us that it is still shaking there. As it did while they were on the call. Another disaster is on the horizon in the Chiba prefecture near them. The oil refinery burned most of the day. They're expecting rain tomorrow and have been warned that the falling rain will be toxic and full of particulates that may burn the skin. They're advising that if they cannot stay inside, it must go out. They are to wear raincoats to cover themselves and not just use umbrellas. Kathy in Maine. This is from B. The nuke industry seems to be prone to build nukes along hot spots, e.g. the proposed San Luis Obispo fault line was the chosen site for such another kind of disaster location by Pacific Gas and Electric. And let's not forget about the nuke, albeit experimental, in Berkeley, part of the University of California educational infrastructure, and right on top of an active fault. From Prairie 2, it is absolutely true that there can be no nuclear explosion in the reactors that are melting down, since that requires a critical mass. But once it melts the fuel assembly into a puddle, the question is if it will form a semi-critical mass. This would, not could, this would fuel a massive geyser that erupts, a continuous stream of irradiated particles created by the destruction of the available building material or even the underlying bedrock, using inrushing groundwater to maintain the new Old Faithful-style geyser of high-pressure steam carrying the fallout material. This could go on for hours, days, or many years until it stops on its own when the uranium finally breaks down or a sufficient amount is expelled to diminish the mass to subcritical, when the steaming would be less violent but still deadly. The heat is sufficient to burn through any material, hence the expression the China syndrome, as the material would continue to sink as it burned the rock away unless it created enough steam to cool the reaction. Jesus, it's like something from some other universe. I mean, this stuff is from Smarley. Excuse me. Mike, in reference to your question regarding what would possess someone to build nuclear reactors in such a dangerous location, I mentioned that, the Ring of Fire, the edge of Japan. Please note that the Japanese are not the only ones who have located reactors in dangerous areas. We have four large nuclear reactors on the west coast of the United States, at Diablo Canyon, Avila Beach near San Luis Obispo, and San Onofre, between Los Angeles and San Diego. None of these is designed to withstand the powerful shocks that rocked Japan recently. A radioactive cloud from the San Onofre reactor could decimate the surrounding urban areas and could conceivably be carried over the rest of southern and central California. A radioactive eruption from the nuclear facility at San Luis Obispo could at the very least destroy much of the area where our winter fresh produce is grown. I hope that this disaster will awaken our resolve to finally work toward a sustainable energy policy free of nuclear energy. But I won't hold my breath. Keeping it lit, Smarley, formerly of Santa Cruz, California. From Mike in Denver, who wrote in that a fission, as a result of one of these meltdowns was impossible. He writes, Mike, nuclear weapons are intricate because they are trying to get the most bang for their U-238 buck. But I said this would preclude the possibility of a fission explosion. If it was possible for the molten fuel in the reactor to all pool in one place, then perhaps a really inefficient and very dirty explosion could occur. I don't know, but reactors are supposed to be designed to prevent pooling. If we were talking about a U.S. reactor, I wouldn't be so sure of that last part. But this is Japan, and they appear to have building codes. Cheers, sort of. Mike in Denver. And then I have one here from Michael and Roswell that I'll share with you when we come back. after this break, and after we do podcast trivia. We're going to do that when we come back. Do we have some players on the line? All right, we have an open line here. The number is 877-996-2556. So we'll do podcast trivia. Excuse me. I'll do share with you Michael in Roswell, New Mexico, his email, and then we'll do some phone calls. If you want to comment about stuff other than just do the trivia exercise, give us a call, 877-996-2556. Stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. Once again, to do that nasty thing. If you win, if you get the right answer, you win. You get a one-year subscription. That's just a whole ass bunch of Malloy Show podcast downloads sent to your email that you can listen to commercial-free at your convenience on any instrument you want to listen to it on. All you have to do is get the right right answer. All right, we ready to go here? Who's first in the barrel? John is in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hey, John.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I'm great. Are you a student or a professor at UNC?
I graduated a few years ago.
Ah, okay. And stayed.
And stayed.
That's a great city, Chapel Hill.
Oh, yeah. It's really nice. It's getting better all the time, even though it's getting bigger and bigger.
You know, I didn't graduate from, but I attended NC State, and one of the things used to irritate the hell out of me was that thing you guys used to have on your bumper stickers, if God wasn't a Tar Heel, why'd he make the sky Carolina blue?
Yeah.
It was always kind of irritating, but that's all right. All right, you ready to do it?
Yes, I am.
Okay, John, let's have the TikTok and... it's in there somewhere. Here it comes. Ah! All right, John, here we go. Serial adulterer, accused tax law violator, and former U.S. House Speaker Newton Leroy Gingrich is in deep consultation regarding his possible decision run for president. As you may know, he recently appeared on a stupefyingly ridiculous religious infomercial program to explain away his adulteries and his checkered past. He said the reason for his unethical and immoral behavior was A. He was possessed by the devil during the 80s and 90s. B. Someone in Kenya had put a bad mojo on him. C. The stress of trying to be a patriotic American led him to adultery. Or D. He was trying to emulate the man he could never be, Bill Clinton.
It was definitely the stress.
C. The stress of trying to be a patriotic American. You're right. All right. And the crowd goes wild. Can you believe that? But you know, when I saw that clip from, what was it, Pat Robertson's program or something, one of those religious infomercial programs where they try to sell you anything and everything that has to do with their religion. And when I saw him give that explanation for his moral and ethical breakdown, that he was just overstressed from trying to do the patriotic thing to his beloved country. I thought I was going to lose my lunch, and yesterday's lunch, too, as a matter of fact. I've never seen anything like that.
Well, it's really scary if he really believes that.
Well, I don't think he does. I think he was just being a, you know, for some reason, Gingrich is going to the bottom of the barrel. He's going down to the religious fanatics in the Republican Party because, I guess, because he thinks that that is going to propel him through a couple of primaries and that'll get him a lot of money. You know, Gingrich was a history professor at the University of, well, at the time it was called West Georgia College. Now it's called the University of West Georgia. But he was a history professor, and as much as I just thoroughly dislike this guy, he just turns my stomach, gives me the creepy crawlies. He comes from a discipline, history, that is, if anything, not antagonistic to religion, but certainly it's some kind of peaceful coexistence between the two. So for him to whore himself like that, no offense to sex workers, on a religious network and start talking about his belief in God. You know, Newt believes in God only insofar as it helps his campaign. But to blame everything that occurred to him because of the stress of trying to be a patriotic American, I really thought that was, you know, on that alone, they ought to elect him. That's the most incredible lie I think I've ever heard. So that ought to give him the office for sure. All right, John, thanks for playing. I'm going to put you on hold, and Kathy's going to get the pertinent information. And I do appreciate you checking in, okay?
Thank you. Bye.
All right, sir. Hold on. John in Chapel Hill snags one of those podcast trivia year subscriptions. And I think that one was courtesy of Sean. All right, as promised, before we go to your phone calls here. Oh, and by the way, this hour has sponsored by Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Their message is, thank you, State Senator Julie Lassa, one of the Fab 14 who fought for the rights of union workers in the middle class. Now we fight to recall Governor Walker and the Republicans who illegally stole our collective bargaining rights. Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin. Thank you. Michael in Roswell writes, the classic problem with the reactors, we're talking some more about the situation in Japan with five nuclear reactors at two nuclear power plants in situations where there could be horrible nuclear accident here. Michael writes, classic problems with the reactors at Fukushima. Given that the U.S. Air Force was flying in coolant water for them, it sounds as if they're trying to get makeup water into the system because the earthquake has damaged the reactor vessel and it's leaking, and or the pumps pickups are damaged and they can't get water to the pumps. If the core water level is dropping, a number of different events may be happening simultaneously. Once a portion of the core is exposed, that portion of the rods gets very hot, which can lead to meltdown. But well before that happens, we'll get hot enough to break the bonds between the hydrogen and oxygen in the water vapor around them, making explosive gas bubbles inside the reactor vessel. As the temperature of those hydrogen and oxygen bubbles increases, so does the pressure inside the vessel, to the point where the pumps can't overcome the pressure and introduce cooler water into the vessel. At that point, the vessel leaks from overpressurization, or the operators vent the gases into the containment building. They say that the radioactivity is minimal because the venting also releases iodine-131, a radioactive daughter product of the uranium fissioning. Once they do this often enough, the pressure in the containment begins to rise to the point where it can't resist the overpressurization and the cracks. At that point, they have a real problem because both the reactor vessel and the containment are overpressurized and are leaking. And if the core temp goes up enough to get something in the reactor vessel hot enough to ignite the hydrogen, there's likely enough free oxygen to blow the whole place up. Then there's nothing to contain the meltdown, and it simply feeds the fires and burns its way through the lower levels into the groundwater. So yes, they can vent the reactor vessel and the containment. But if the pressure is still high enough to require continued venting of the containment, they're probably lying about the cores being covered, because repeated emergency venting means that hydrogen and oxygen are still being produced in quantity. And that only happens when there's temperatures around 1600 degrees Fahrenheit, which is many hundreds of degrees higher than the normal operating temperature of a pressurized water reactor. Whew. Michael in Roswell, New Mexico. No, I get it. I really do. And thanks for that explanation. That is something that we lay people can understand. I don't know what the hell Michael was in a different life. Maybe he was ran one of these places, huh? But that's a great explanation, Michael, and thank you. I appreciate it. It certainly puts it in terms I can understand, but also scares the living hell out of me. Do you know, what's the normal life expectancy of a nuclear reactor? What is it, 30 years? It's my understanding we haven't built one in this country since the 70s. Is that right? I don't even know anymore. Since the 80s? If that's the case, then every single reactor that we have in the United States, whatever that number is beyond its shelf life. It's beyond its life expectancy. Is that correct? I know there are several that are in a sleep state, if you can use such a term when you're talking about nuclear reaction. But I think this is a massive disaster in this country that is just waiting to occur. And I don't know what the hell is, what is going to prevent it. I mean, there is a point, there is an event horizon, let's use that term, that makes me sound smart, where once you cross that horizon, I know, it has to do with the black hole, but I'm talking about this. The event horizon, once you cross the horizon, there's nothing you can do to stop something horrible. Oh, hell. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Before the hour, thanks to Joe and Nancy in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, for sponsoring this hour. Their message, thank you, State Senator Julie Lassa, one of the Fab 14 who fought for the rights of union workers and the middle class. Now, we fight to recall Governor Walker and the Republicans who illegally stole our collective bargaining rights. Thanks, Joe and Nancy. Also from Carol, last hour, whose message was, we wish our fellow Americans peace, love, and community in our shared future. Turn on your love light and keep it lit. That's from Bucco and Carol in British Columbia. And the first hour, of course, with Kathleen McCall, who simply sponsored the hour. Thanks to all of you. We do appreciate it. K Cassie is now at Princeton, and she is calling in. Hi, Cassie.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Pretty good. When did you start classes? Last September?
Yes.
Well, good for you. Good for you. How's it going?
It's really hard. Really hard.
Well, you're going to a very demanding university.
Yeah, but it's good. I mean, I like the professors, and I like a lot of the students, and some of the kids in my dorm are a lot of fun. Some of the kids in my dorm are pain in the neck, but it's all good.
Well, that's good. It's always good to hear from you. Since we heard from you the first time about 7 years ago.
Oh, yeah, it was a long time ago.
God, how old were you then? 13?
I think I just turned 14.
You just turned 14.
Yeah.
And for the people who don't remember, Cassie called in, your brother was going to be sent overseas, right?
Yes.
And you were going to be put in foster care.
Yes.
And your parents were just not available.
Right. Well, one was in jail and the other one was in Kentucky doing things that he didn't need to be doing.
Right. So some people heard you that night when you were 14 and went to work, and your brother was allowed to stay in the States.
Yeah.
And
you were
allowed to stay with him since he was your sole custodian, and you did not have to go into foster care, and now you're at Princeton.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah, and a whole lot of people taught me how to do letter writing campaigns and how to be involved, how to make things happen.
Well, you certainly learned how to do that. All right, I just wanted to refresh people. Now, that's not why you called in.
It's not. I called in because I need to get one of these podcast subscriptions.
Okay.
I can't listen during the rate. I'm studying.
I understand.
Parties and whatever. And I need to get a podcast. Or you need to have a student rate.
Student rate. Well, I'll tell you what, when we're finished with the phone call, I'll put you on hold, Cassie. I think we may have a student rate. I'll put you on hold and let Kathy chat with you about the student rate. Because, yeah, there's no way in hell you're going to hear this program when it's broadcast live. It's just not going to happen for you.
No, yeah, it's very rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare that I get a chance to. But every once in a while.
All right, I'll tell you what, we got about 2 minutes left tonight. Go ahead.
Okay. So in the 2 minutes left, what's wrong with this country?
Wait a second.
I'll be specific. Why do people have all of the wrong values?
Why do people have the wrong values?
All the wrong values.
Or are devoid of values.
Yeah, I mean, whether you're talking about supporting unions.
Right.
And helping working people to have a voice, and so they can't get fired for no reason.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is a good thing, and I'm not really part of the working world too much, but I can't imagine that the other side has anything but let's feed our corporate sponsors who feed us.
That's, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other thing, in talking about the tsunami and the earthquake today, we as a country don't have the values of let's put our nuclear reactors somewhere that we really can take care of them, and that we do have every single one of the safety guards that they have in Japan.
Well,
and all of the backup systems and all of the having extra coolant in a different place and having extra this and extra that. And I don't, you know, I think that we barely make, you know, we may make the people who build them do stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I would bet you that the Republicans don't want to pay for any, you know, costly regulations.
Well, no.
That would require them to build it properly.
You know, nuclear reactors are capital intensive. They take billions of dollars and they take a long time to construct. The Republicans don't want anything to do, and Democrats don't either, with cleaning up the mess. But the fact is, Cassie, there's no such thing as safe nuclear power. It just does not exist. Hey, listen, Cassie, I have to leave it there. Stay on the phone. Kathy will pick up and talk to you about a student scholarship. I'll say goodnight to everybody else. Thanks a lot for participating tonight and on the whole week. Jesus, what a week. I'll see you Monday, all right? Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Oh, and have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.